This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Entik. Last month, the Pakatan Harapan government released a report prepared by the National Unity Consultative Council. This report, which was ready since 2015, was never made public by the previous government, and it details 9 key outcomes required to strengthen national unity and improve inter-communal relations by 2020. With me today to go through these outcomes, as well as the report's recommendations to achieve them, is Dato' Dr. Denison Jayasuriya, Principal Research Fellow at the Institute of Ethnic Studies, University Kebangsaan Malaysia. Dr. Denison, welcome.
Yes, thank you for the invitation.
So you work directly on this report. Between all the discussions around the 11th Malaysia Plan midterm review and the recent release of the budget 2019, not much discussion or attention has been given to NUCC's report in the press or elsewhere. But if I can get you to go back to 2013, summarize for us why there was a need for this report and the need to set up a council for national unity in the first place.
Yes. Thank you very much. I think it's an important document and there is a necessity for more public engagement and discussion. If we remember, after the general election or even on election night in 2013, there was a discussion on the polarization of the voting pattern, and then it was indicated that it was a Chinese tsunami and that national reconciliation was central because there seemed to be a difference between urban voters and rural voters in the 2013, and that the government then felt that if national reconciliation should be a key agenda, and as a result, a consultative council with the mandate to prepare a national blueprint for national unity. And Tan Sri Samsudin Osman was appointed chairman, and Tan Sri Lee Lam Tai as the deputy chair. Professor Samsul was appointed in the secretariat with the KITA team to provide content, research writing, and to support the Department for National Unity, then headed by Dato' Azman, who was then the Director General. It engaged, so as a result of this need for fostering and strengthening national unity, this was done. And if we see the 2018 results as well, there is a kind of a divide between West Coast, East Coast, between Malay Muslim voters and urbanites in the urban, cutting across Malay, Chinese, Indian. There's a kind of a green wave and so forth, if we want to look at that. But the theme of strengthening national unity has been a consistent political discussion because there seems to be this public discourse about disunity over religion or language or special treatment and various other areas. And so 28 people were appointed then, and a report was written and completed and handed to the government in June 19, 2015. I think, as you said, that document was not released at that point to the general public review, although Cabinet and the government agencies were studying it. But on October 12, 2018, the new Cabinet released it and entrusted YB Senator Vedamurthy and the department to enter into engagement with the public, because time has lapsed between 2015 and 2018. Are the issues identified, the outcomes recognized, the recommendations suggested still relevant? And so the department is hosting, I think, over 6 public town hall meetings, which I think they have completed. Plus, they have put it on the internet, their website, and asking public to comment. I would agree with you that the midterm review, the budget, other politics of the day seems much more popularistic than looking at a blueprint. And so there is some quarters like civil society has been active in hosting discussions, and government has given till end of November to submit it to a dedicated website, which is linked to the National Unity Department in the Prime Minister's department. And the full document, which is available in Malay, is also on the website for public review.
Right. So I suppose it came full circle. It took the National Unity Minister to revive this this report. And the goal initially of this report, among many things, was to set up the National Unity Blueprint as well.
Yes. Yeah?
And so what is the goal or the mandate this time?
I think some issues of legislation is relevant because over the years, the discussion of the Harmony Bills and the issue of the Sedition Act, that still remains relevant. And also themes like conflict resolution, community mediation, and even now on the discussions on the International Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, you have had differing views even on the Constitution and feedback. Not really very objective, very emotive discussions. And I think it is important for us to sit down as a nation now that, you know, it's the new government, either on TV, either in discussions, to put all the cards on the table, as it were, and then discussing it in terms of reformulating some of the themes, because people are so moved by either support or against it without actually getting into the substantive discussion. And there's a lot of distortion to what is true. Sometimes what is true is made to look as untrue, and what is untrue as public opinion becomes true. Because even with the change, even with openness, there isn't sufficient rigor in objective discussion and analysis. And I think this document provides the content. I had identified the issues. It had made so many recommendations. Almost 2 years were spent on it in its preparation. And it's a waste to just let it lie low in a cabinet somewhere and start the work again. So I think it's now getting public to read it, to say at the heart of it, are the 11 critical issues identified still relevant? Are the outcomes relevant? Are the recommendations relevant? If we implement these over the next 3 years, would it improve the situation of national unity, especially Sedition Act or Harmony Act or independent commission that would look at discrimination or complaints related to that? It enhances nation building. So instead of people polarizing by political parties, by ethnicity, by religion, we take the national agenda, and the report and its recommendations are targeting that.
Is the National Unity Council still in existence?
No, it ceased at the end of 2015. I think the government would appoint a new panel. I think once the feedback is received, it will become the framework of the council's role. NUCC itself recommended not a council, which the Pakatan Harapan government's manifesto says, but the NUCC recommended an independent commission, because an independent commission is free from political maneuvers that sometimes dictates the politics of the day. They have to rise above party politics and even government and sectoral interests to be in the interest of the nation. And that's why a national unity commission is to be set up. And a draft resolution, draft act was bill was prepared, along with not having the Sedition Act, but Hate Speech Act. And some of these things have been drafted, but it would be up to the government of the day to study them and see its relevance and upgrade it. There was also a recommendation that the Department of National Unity, which is under the Prime Minister's department, should be made a full-fledged ministry with the resources and manpower. If end of the day, if we have prosperity, we become a fully developed nation, if we have all the things, but if we lose out on national unity, if peace and harmony is lost, no level of prosperity can restore that. So I think investing into it is what this report brings out to government. But unfortunately, the politics of the day, the urgency of public discussions seem to override the need for this, or even people's interest to read. So if you have a document like this one, which is about 258 pages, then you have a disk of all the submissions, which might be up to another 400 or 500 pages. It takes a highly, you know, interested party to go through it. But the executive summaries, the key findings, would be a good start for us to build on, because we are not talking of rocket science here. Most Malaysians know what the problem is and what should we do to fix it. So with the new government, God willing, there is political will to take on the challenges in an inclusive manner and address them.
Yeah, it might not be a bad thing that it's that long and takes someone really interested to do it, because you want someone who really has thought through or deliberated
through this, yes,
all the issues before making
a
feedback known, right? I'm also glad that you brought up ICERT. We'll talk more about the ICERT ratification, because in many ways it encapsulates why the recommendations were made by NUCC 3 years ago and how we can talk about something like ICERT going forward. Let's do that after we take a short break. I'm speaking today to Dr. Dennis Anjaya Surya from University Kebangsaan Malaysia. We're discussing the NUCC's findings and recommendations. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. My guest today is Dr. Dennis Anjaya Surya, Principal Research Fellow at the Institute of Ethnic Studies, University Kebangsaan Malaysia. We're discussing the National Unity Consultative Council report, which was completed in 2015, but only released publicly last month by the Pakatan Harapan government, by the National Unity Minister, P. Wedamuti, no less. I suppose that's an encouraging sign, isn't it, that the Prime Minister has taken it upon, has saw it unnecessary to appoint a minister that is focused solely on national unity. It's a sign that this administration would take this issue of ethnic relations seriously going forward.
Yes, but the previous government also had Tan Sri Joseph Kurup was the National Unity Minister at the time, and that tradition carries on in that context. But I think the current government would have to give a bit more weightage in terms of budget, personnel, and interagency commitment, because national unity cannot be just done by the unity department. The contestations come at the level of education, in business, in recruitment, in human capital development, in other sectors. And so all the agencies must have a national unity and a principle of inclusion as fundamental to the ethos of the government. And if they do that, then it's monitoring, disaggregated data gathering to see whether specific minorities or people from Sabah or Sarawak who feel alienated from the majority or from West Malaysia, because there's an element of integration, there's an element of ethnic and sub-ethnic issues as well in that.
Yeah. So in the report, there were many issues and concerns that the council could agree on and agree that they are unanimous in thinking that these issues require addressing. But there were four specific areas that it highlighted unanimous agreement could not be reached. And these four are, you've mentioned this, the Sedition Act, also local government, the need for local government elections, the use of the term Bumiputera versus non-Bumiputera, and ICERD, which is the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. This is something that is currently in the national discourse, whether we should or should not do it and whether it goes against the federal constitution and as well as the social contract for the position of religion and race in the country. So how do we, you know, you said this is a very emotive discussion rather than based on facts and substance. If, you know, all the recommendations in the report is taken and implemented, how would a discussion like this take place? Because it will largely be led by public figures or politicians or civil society leaders even that have a vested interest in perpetuating this argument that they should, ICERD should not be be ratified for whatever reasons.
Okay. Now, we need to note that in the appointment of the 28 people, they took into account gender, ethnicity, regional representation, age, and different interest groups. So 28, if you look at the names, you would look at the breakdown of ethnicity, religion, gender. So it's sort of a representation of Malaysian society. So within that context, of course, there would be areas that many common areas in which a consensus could be sought. But there could be areas in which it might be problematic or there are differing views. Even after serious discussion and study, people for various reasons take it on. The chairman of NUCC felt that, and with the support of the members, that such issues should not be left out of the document, but it should be captured because the document is to help the Prime Minister or the Cabinet come to a decision that ultimately it is the government deciding whether they want to implement these things or not. So if we take the issue of ICERD and take the 16 recommendations and the major issues identified and so forth, the document is very clear that it will not affect the federal constitution because the details of the recommendations and the outcomes reaffirm the constitution as being fundamental for nation building. So in the outcomes, Article 3, 4, 8, 10, 11, 152, 153, 181, are identified that they are foundational to nation building. And it's in that context that the theme of ICERD is taken up. Now, in the theme of ICERD, I think the document, the recommendations and the issues identified, majority agree to its ratification because it's balanced with no compromise to the federal constitution. That means the federal constitution has to be taken in its totality, no amendments in it.
Majority within the council.
Within the council.
Right. Okay.
But there was a section or a smaller group, we didn't put percentages or names to it, who felt this is a matter the department should handle. They were not saying yes or no, but they were handing over to the department to see when is the right and appropriate time to do it. The public discourse today, which is distorted, is that if you ratify it, you're obligated to abolish a lot of things. And that is not accurate. Because the discussions didn't take, the public discussions here have not reviewed Indian constitution that has affirmative action for a section of its community. And India has ratified ISAT. So the reservation of jobs and places for certain communities, and even the U.S. has affirmative policies for disadvantaged communities, it's intact. So the ICERT provision has it, but over time there will be issues. And the implications of ratification is something we can discuss. Would the affirmative action be never-ending? Or what is the constitutional guideline or the spirit of the Constitution? I think that's something we should objectively discuss. But for NUCC, position of Islam or other religions, position of the royalty, position of Article 153, position on 152 on national language, all this unaffected because there's no recommendation from NUCC for repealing or amending any of it. So this is where public discussion has become distorted, overly politicized, irrational, with not sufficient, because I even hear TV news repeating something which is actually a distorted view as though it is, you know. Right. Because it's one position some people, and I'm not saying you should dismiss that view. People, and all people have a right to diverse views in a democratic society. Those diverse views should enter the discussion in an open way to list down why they disagree. And is their disagreement or their view rational, objective, from a historical, legal point of view? Is there enough checks and balances? Sort of thing in the ICERT context, you know. Mm-hmm. But the other area that had a majority support was the repealing of the Sedition Act, which is a commitment Pakatan Harapan has made right from the beginning. And in the NUCC, majority agreed that it should be repealed, but a minority felt otherwise because they felt that the interest of certain areas that's protected by the Constitution would be weakened, that people would question the royalty or the special position. But there are other ways in which protection is provided and safeguards are provided within the Constitution. And a draft harmony bill of three were proposed, which included a hate speech bill. So what people were saying is, you cannot go around and say this community and this religion and instigate it. And you cannot be selective over it. And that is why an independent commission and not politicians determine whether what is being said or mass mobilization of people to create disunity doesn't become a political tool in the hands of any ruling government of the day, but in an independent, professional way to assess it. So the Sedition Act, I think, had that support. Now, there was sensitivity over the term Bhumiputra and non-Bhumiputra. This is sensitive, but it's not questioning Article 153. It was merely a proposal made by one section, but the majority in NUCC disagreed to it. But a minority felt the real problem is demarcating citizenship into two categories of people. who are privileged and non-privileged, who have access. So everybody wants to get into the Bhumiputra camp. So can I, because of my long stay, that I'm indigenous, so a particular community is one. So Indian Muslims or the Portuguese community or the Pranakan. So you all want to get in. Now, there are clear guidelines which many feel are abused because the definition of who a Malay is constitutionally, not only Islam, Malay language, culture, but also brings that their parents or grandparents at the time should have lived in Malaya or in Singapore in the context, you know, which is a provision. So that's open for discussion, but didn't get support
right.
In that context.
Yeah. So even within this council,
28 people,
where presumably all of them are level-headed, well-informed, they could not agree, and there were disagreements. What more in the public, where it's very easily turned emotive, and I suppose a lot of this talk about Bhumiputra versus non-Bhumiputra, it takes political will to move the needle on the discussion, isn't it? And so even a minority, a loud minority, a backlash from a small segment of society would be enough to make leaders fearful of pursuing this agenda. We see now some backpedaling on ICED ratification already by certain Harappan leaders.
I think in this context, political courage is needed, political boldness to speak the truth and ensure that the safeguards are there. In the Constitution, there can be safeguards during the ratification, in the reporting process. But what ICERT would bring out would definitely be you cannot abuse the provisions. You have to be far more transparent if contracts are given, if scholarships are given. That would be there. Mm-hmm. But we can list down what are the implications. I agree with you that these are emotive things, but we are a maturing democracy. We have come a long way where the government has been changed, and a government where the Prime Minister in New York has made a promise of ratification of the major conventions. And therefore, there needs to be more serious engagement. You know, so national unity or the information department is almost silent on this issue. You cannot just leave national unity. You must have a campaign. People are campaigning no to ICERT. But if the government policy is for, you need the dialogue in the Malay context. Because that community, as it stands, has been briefed in a particular way where their fears are being alerted. And so a clearer understanding of the Constitution is needed, a clearer understanding of ICERT and the provision, assurance that we are committed to history, to culture, to language, to the provision. NUCC recommendations must be taken in total, that it reaffirms the constitutional balance. That is very... So some would say, okay, Denison, NUCC is not at all controversial. It is controversial in one sense, that it wants to reaffirm the constitutional balance that was agreed upon, and that all of us should have the right understanding and appreciation. I mean, basically, no one will lose out in terms of your religion, economic development, your educational achievement, your freedoms. But where there is infringement of some kind, you must have a mechanism to resolve it.
Speaking about mechanism, I think in the recommendations, I think there's a mix of a soft and hard approach, isn't it?
Yes.
the need to improve political maturity or democratic literacy. I think that's a soft approach. The need for more understanding of different cultures and yes. Other languages, another soft approach. And then there is also the need to set up, as you said, the Independent Commission, the Law Review and Reform Commission, and things like this. Will it be possible, I think, going forward, for it to be institutionalized so that, you know, it would not be legal or proper for a political leader to marginalize or scapegoat a certain community if they did poorly in an election, for example? How would the recommendations resolve something like this?
I think one of that is the enactment of the harmony bills that would bring hate speech. Because a lot of it, because we have other legislation in the penal code and so forth for violence and so forth, but in terms of hate speech, in the way people demonize a community or create distortion, and then they said no, the media got it wrong and tried to escape out of it. So I think one institutionalization is strong legislative protection. This is in addition to the soft approaches of information dissemination and so forth. The other, of course, that is recommended is the community mediation and conflict resolution centers. What is being called for, and NUCC recognized that, are non-judicial mechanisms to resolve it. Now, if I'm upset with my neighbor or one community is upset with another, or people go and demonstrate in front of a church or a mosque or a place of worship because they are unhappy that this group has come to our neighborhood, then they all lodge police reports and counter reports. Then the policeman becomes a mediator and investigator and then tries to arrest someone if there is violence. If not, he tries to pacify the people. But what else people are saying in this model of community mediation, that they come before a community mediation officer or center.
Who are the people arbitrating these disputes?
This one, the law would have to provide that. There would have to be training. There would have to be provisions. They are not judges. They are not arbitrators. They are more mediators. Because in a community situation, you cannot say you win and you lose, you know. Because in this kind of a situation, you want to find a solution that both communities agree upon. And there are models and examples of this. And currently, the Bar Council does training. There is a mediation act and the training and qualified mediators who are employed who take on that role to do it. But this has to be spread out in a way that it provides. Singapore has a very good model on community mediation, and it's actually managed by their law department in Singapore by the government that addresses grievances at an individual, group, community levels to defuse it in that sense. You know? And then institutionalizing will mean that the department cannot be under-resourced without highly trained, qualified people and upgraded. This will increase costs for government, but that's the kind of investment. Plus the blueprint that is being worked out, action plan and blueprint, how each ministry takes national unity as a key focal point. Whether and they make a recommendation on poverty and the bottom 40 community, that it must be across ethnicity. You cannot then have programs just for Indians, for Chinese, for Malays, for Orang Aslis, and institutions and agencies that are race-centered in its personalities. They must be trained for a multi-ethnic delivery and recognition. The principles are there, but people feel isolated on the ground to the institutions providing it. So some of this will have to, and of course the suggestions that have been made by other groups is stronger commitment to to inclusion, disaggregated data, inclusion. This is something I'm just adding on, ombudsman and inclusion ombudsman, who then is able to, and also the role played by the Human Rights Commission to monitor this. So empower the independent process of monitoring beyond government and beyond the political process, so people feel the system is just and fair. But overall, in its comparison to Malaysia and other countries, we are enjoying a fairly peaceful coexistence as a nation. But capturing the sense of being a Malaysian first, without losing your own ethnic, religious, linguistic identities, but being Malaysian, the spirit of being Malaysian, flying the Malaysian flag, the patriotism, that is something that people must have a sense of belonging. So that's where I think some of the detailed documents will come, where the recommendations link to patriotism and your sense of ownership of the land. If you are alienated from your land and somebody is taking your land, your sense of patriotism to the land and the institution. So I think a lot of ideas are there, but I think we need to have a continual public engagement so that we are Malaysians. Our model of society is we are multicultural, very diverse. Educational system is diverse. So we cannot talk of closing down this and that and all. But within the systems, how do we then ensure? That's what the NUCC report is seeking to build, national unity and harmony in a way that will enhance culture, identity, diversity, appreciation of diversity, but at the same time, having one sense of being Malaysian.
Where can people go to download the report in full or the executive summary?
They can go to the National Unity website. Mm-hmm. There are different forums or discussions taking place. One can read and write your own comments, and email website and the details are in. If they just Google Perpaduan or National Unity Malaysia or Prime Minister's Department, they will get into the website.
Dr. Dennison, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.